This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio. Mino Studio is a pre- and post-production facility for all of your audio needs. Mino Studio's founder is an accredited audio engineer with top 40 and indie album credits. With over 30 years of music industry experience, Mino Studio can take your podcast from idea to reality. Contact Mino Studio at MinoStudio777@gmail.com for more information. That's MinoStudio777@gmail.com.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Well, I am here with Michael Blanc. Very excited to have Mike on the show. He is an avid investor. He's an expert in teaching others how to do their first apartment building deal by raising money from others. You may recognize him from Bigger Pockets, where he's been a weekly contributor for the past 2 years. He hosts the number one apartment building investing podcast, and he's also an expert instructor for the REI Classroom on FlipNerd. Michael knows a thing or two about raising money. He's raised over $1.6 million in total for house flips, pizza restaurants, and apartment buildings. He is just a talented guy, an investor, as well as a teacher. And he's going to share with us his story, and I think there's going to be something in it for everybody. So, Michael, welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're real thrilled to have you. You've got a great background and definitely an interesting background. I'd love for you to sort of expand. The introduction didn't really do you justice here, but I would really love to hear your story about, you know, where you came from and how you got into real estate investing.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm an entrepreneur kind of through and through, and I've done all kinds of stuff from house flips and short sales and landlording, software startup, apartment buildings, and now, you know, coaching programs. So I've done all kinds of different stuff. But the truth is, you know, I didn't grow up to be an entrepreneur. In fact, I figured all this stuff out when I was in my mid-30s. And, you know, I kind of grew up the way many people grow up, which is, you know, I was taught to get good grades and get a good job. And that's really what it was. And it took me a long time to figure out that, man, that's not actually the way I was wired.
Interesting. Yeah. You started with a different approach, didn't you? You looked at technology, computer sciences, right?
Yeah. You know, at the time, I was trying to figure out what the heck I should major in. And I figured I liked, you know, technology, and that's kind of what I did. You know, and in 2004 or five is when I figured out that actually I was an entrepreneur, which is kind of when I read Rich Dad Poor Dad for the first time. And it kind of really slapped me upside the head with regards to my financial goals, which at the time were really about, you know, building up my bank account, really, and not really anything about passive investing. So when I read that book, you know, my plan, Bill, was to have my own software company. I mean, I grew up in software, and I joined a startup in the late 90s, which was very successful, and we ended up going public and put some bunch of money in my bank account, which was great. So, you know, but when I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, I was like, man, I got to do something different. And at that point, I decided to pursue a cash flow business, which happened to be a chain of pizza restaurants, and real estate, which at that time happened to be flipping houses. And I knew that I wanted to do commercial real estate. And so that's at the time when I really pursued both and then went full-time just being an entrepreneur.
Wow, that's great. Now, are you still active in the pizza business?
It's something that I am getting out, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. It certainly has been a lesson learned. You know, when I first set out on this full-time entrepreneur thing, my bet was on the pizza restaurants. In other words, I was going to deploy my net worth into these restaurants and have enough to build or buy three, and it would then self-fund the operation so that once a year I would be able to open up a new restaurant, and I'd had a 20 unit master plan. So that was my big idea. It wasn't so much real estate at the time. The big idea was restaurants, and it didn't really work out that way. And that was certainly another lesson learned. On the real estate side, though, it's been much more positive. It's far as it's safe to say that I have nearly not lost any kind of money on a real estate. In fact, that's a business that I can continue scaling up, and that did not work out with a pizza restaurants.
Now, how did you go from pizza to properties?
It was kind of a simultaneous thing. Remember, I had at this point I had a bunch of money, and I bet big on the pizza restaurant. So I flipped a few houses in 2006, 2005 and 2006. And then actually got into commercial real estate and apartment buildings, and I was looking at a property in Texas. Did a bunch of stuff in Texas and finally found an 82 unit after looking at about 150 deals, and got a verbal agreement on a deal there, which was smoking hot. And I had to make a decision. I said, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to have to spend some time in Texas. And at the time, we were building a bunch of restaurants and buying a bunch of restaurants. So I said, look, I'm going to put the whole real estate thing on hold and focus on the pizza stuff, which was sort of great because I wasn't holding any real estate over the recession, though I was holding pizza restaurants, which is probably about as bad or worse. And by the time I got back into real estate in 2009, I had deployed all of my capital, and so the only way I could the only way I can get back into real estate was to try to raise money, and so that's what I did. I raised money. And that's how I started into flipping houses. We flipped about 30 houses in about 2.5-3 years, so about between 2009 and 2012. Also got an apartment buildings at that time.
Now, when did you buy the 80 unit?
I didn't. I actually ended up not buying that 80 unit. In fact, I convinced my broker to go ahead and buy it. So he ended up buying the deal because we both knew it was awesome. I had built a lot of rapport with this one broker, and so he took it down himself.
So it was after the market crash then that you really, really started buying multifamily.
That's right. Flipping houses, which I stopped doing, and multifamily. And I think just multifamily is just the way to go for various different reasons. And that's something that I focus on now for myself. But I'm also teaching others how to do their first multi-unit deal.
Now, going from flipping to apartments, that's an interesting move, and I know others that have done it. But when did you really, your eyes just open up? You had that light bulb moment where, this is where I need to be. Multifamily is it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the light bulb moment in general was when I first started raising money. That was a huge light bulb aha moment for me. When it occurred to me that, man, I my ability to scale the business is only dependent on my ability to find deals and to raise money. It has no bearing on my own personal resources or shortcomings thereof. And that was huge, right? Because a lot of people are just saying, well, we'll just do a house here or there because that's all I can do at the moment. When in fact, the thinking should be much, much different. It's like, how can I achieve my financial goals and raising money? And if I can get good at raising money, the sky is the limit. And so that's when I said, man, this house flipping stuff is great, but there's nothing passive about flipping houses. And also there comes a point, and you can talk to a lot of house flippers who are now looking at multifamily, is that it's very difficult to scale the business. Even if you have a team in place and systems in place, really scaling the business in a way where you're building passive income and long-term wealth is very difficult to do with single-family houses, which is really why multifamily is the way to go. But a lot of people don't get started with multifamily because of these limiting beliefs, specifically around, hey, I don't have the money, I don't have the experience, and let me just do some single family houses first. And that's I'm here to change some of that mindset.
Now, when you were flipping, were you self-funding or did you have investors?
No, I remember in 2009, I had none of my money anymore. So it was all investor money.
Okay. So you're developing sort of a investor pool of people that you were making contact with.
That's right.
Okay, great. What was your first deal, your first apartment or multifamily deal?
Yeah, it was the first deal I did was a 12 unit in Washington, D.C. And I actually got it through a wholesaler who knew a wholesaler. It was one of those daisy chains through the house flipping side. And it was a real mess. It was a mess to close. There was compliance issues. There was delinquency issues, vacancy issues. There was a big giant mess. And once we got that straightened out and closed on it, the real mess started. There was one particular tenant who, the least offense, it was not paying the rent, but he kind of made my life miserable by calling all kinds of different agencies on me. And luckily that stopped, but it went on for about 18 months. And I thought I was going to run out of money in this deal. I had put a cash reserve in for the unforeseen fund, but this guy was draining me very quickly. So it was kind of I dropped myself into the deep end on this one. And when I speak to people, other more experienced people, they can't believe all the things that happened in this one deal. I eventually ended up replacing my property manager, learned a lot through that process. And now that property is not only stable, but doing very well. And we're probably going to refinance out or the investors out of that deal.
Wow. Did you go into it thinking it was a value add deal and it ended up being much more than just a value add deal?
It was a value add deal. We had to do some renovations. Rents are very low, but because of rent control, we knew it would take some time to do that. The biggest mistake was the property management company just did not like Section 8, but it was a Section 8 type building. So the new property manager specialized in Section 8, and it made a huge difference because Section 8 in Washington, D.C. is exempt from rent control, which means that if you put a Section 8 tenant in there, you can go from $500 to $1,000, and that made a humongous difference to the cash flow.
Would you say it was a C property or?
Yeah, C-type okay. property. Yeah, sure. Okay. Affordable housing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Tenants that you inherited, did you keep most of them or did you have to sort of clean house there?
Yeah, we did clean house. But with a lot of affordable rent control housing, especially in D.C. and other states like California, it's very difficult to get the tenant out really for any reason at all. And that includes non-payment of rent. Right. So,
wow.
So we still have some of the original tenants paying $525 for units that are renting at $1,200, right upstairs from them.
Oh, gee.
Yeah. So it was a tough one to cut your teeth on. And, I realized that. On the other hand, though, these challenges, as an example, again, as an entrepreneur, you go through these challenging times. And when you're going through them, they're not very pleasant at all, but it does mature you. It prepares you from what's to come. And I think that's one reason I have a very unique perspective on other people who want to get into deals. Because I've just, been through a lot, experienced a lot of things and can put certain things in perspective.
But isn't that the best place we learn? I mean, in the midst of some of those tough situations, we can have all the education in the world, but it's not until we get in the trenches that we really learn those things, right?
Yeah, so true.
Looking at this, and maybe this is the example, I'm not sure, but what would you say is your biggest mistake in real estate investing?
Yeah, so I don't know exactly where to start. We make all kinds of big mistakes. I think the biggest mistake is probably made on the pizza stuff, which transfers over to real estate, but it's directly applicable to that. So I try not to make that same mistake again. But the lesson really there is there's no such thing as completely passive income. I know we talk about passive income, and I certainly strive for it, and I have passive income. But one of the issues that I faced was in the pizza business, the way I set it up was as a passive investment because I hired a person, an experienced multi-unit restaurant operator who was running the restaurants, and we were up to six at one time. And it was a great place for me because I met him once a week and patted myself on the back and counted my passive income money, which was great for a period of 3 or 4 years. It really was awesome. The problem is, I treated it as a completely passive income. I was detached from the investment itself, and I was not noticing that my margins were decreasing until the point where it occurred to me I can no longer afford my multi-unit operator. And at one point I had to let him go, and now I had his job. And now it was nothing passive about it anymore. Now I was managing six restaurants myself. And that lesson then carries over into real estate. I mean, we put property management in place. That's the goal. That's why I like multifamily. It's built into the business model itself, but it does not give us an excuse or reason to take our eye off the ball and become complacent, which is why I have a rhythm of weekly calls with a property manager. I review certain reports and certain key metrics so that I stay in touch with the investment and I know what's going on and I can make adjustments. And I think that is one of my major mistakes, and I see other people do as well when they think they get into passive income and they just kind of let it ride a little bit.
So how much time do you think you spend weekly with on average per property?
I know it varies. I can tell you this. Your quality of life and the time you spend on your properties depends on the quality of a property management. If I'm spending a half hour reviewing reports and doing a quick phone call with my property management for a single property, that's a good investment for me, right? But the previous property managers, it was far more than that. It was hours per week. And it just became very frustrating for me as well as a property manager. It wasn't that there was necessarily incompetence. There was not a fit. The property manager specialized in single family houses and small apartments. And I had demands that were a little bit more professional in nature, and there was a disconnect there. So my advice is, it's really all about the property manager. If you have a good property manager, your time involvement is minimal.
I don't think you can overemphasize that, because that to me is really the difference. If you want a true passive income experience, having that solid person in place that you can trust, that provides you the information you need, that makes the decisions based on your instructions and your plan, then that person is invaluable. And I couldn't agree with you more. I have some great property managers, personally, that I check in with them once a week and things are great. There are times every now and then where you have a problem and you have to deal with it. But generally, if you've got that strong person in place, it's not going to require a lot of your time during that week or the month.
I guess at the bottom line is, you're going to make mistakes. I don't think people should try to avoid mistakes. You should try to avoid the costly ones, the ones that will, you'll lose your shirt on. But again, you got to educate yourself. And a lot of times, we just jump into stuff and we just do it. That's what entrepreneurs do, which allows us to, the ignorance allows us to get into things. And sometimes now knowing what we do, we might not actually get into that same business, right? So it's kind of a double-edged sword. But we try to do the best that we can with the information that we have.
What do you do differently now when you pick up a new property and you're looking for a property manager?
I just now know what questions to ask and what to look for, and that's, I pass that knowledge on to my students or whoever asks, and it's just questions that I wouldn't occur to ask. Just knowing what to ask and what to look for, and just really making sure there's a match between that property management company. For example, if I'm looking at a 25 unit property and the property manager specializes at 100 plus units and has a few 20, there may not be a match there. Likewise, if someone manages a bunch of houses and duplexes and now you have a 20, it's not in their sweet spot, right? You look a lot at their systems, at their reporting. What do they track? Things of that nature. So just some questions that I would ask now, not knowing back. But this is how we learn, right? So I don't beat myself up over it. It is what it is, but you try to do better as you move forward.
Besides the interview and question, getting to know that person, is there other due diligence that you take in researching to find that person?
Yeah, word of mouth and referrals are obviously key. And the second property management company that I hired was actually referred by another investor who owned property. And the first one was not. It was kind of a cold call. But when you're first getting into an area, you have to kind of you may not have that referral. But I think referrals are big. And I think that fit is key. You really got to have someone who manages the kind of property in the kind of area that you have. There's really got to be a match.
Do you give them a some sort of a document or something that outlines what you're expecting from them? Maybe it's a form they have to complete each week.
Yeah, now I know what reports I like to see, and I will ask those up front, and I say, again, show me your reports, and I'll review those. I'll review those monthly. I'll look at the bills that they have. I'll look at the response time to repair requests and things of that nature.
Great. Well, conversely, what would you say is your biggest success? Maybe it's a a property you purchase in your business?
To learning to raise money has been probably my biggest success because I've raised money for house flips, pizza restaurants, apartment buildings, and that to me is a game changer, and it really changes the mindset of anyone who wants to get into real estate investing with apartment buildings specifically. Is that just opens up your world so much, and most people don't even believe they can raise money. So what I really delight in is showing people the process and what's possible, and then when they try it, you know, a little bit, you know, timidly at first, and when they get that first investor says yes, I'll invest $100,000 with you, then they'll just a light bulb goes off and they're on fire, and I think that's been one of my biggest successes and the biggest difference it's made in my investing as well as other people.
So here's a chicken and egg question for you here. Do you go and find your investors after you have the property, or do you try to get sort of a corral of investors prior to finding a property?
Yeah, Bill, this is the classic chicken and egg problem. And and it's exactly like you described, which is someone says, well, okay, I got you, Michael. Let's go raise some money. But you know, I don't have a deal on a contract, so I can't raise money now. And then, you know, let's say that they actually have one under contract and now there's not enough money to raise money. And so they're stuck. And so I've solved this problem.
Oh, okay. We got to hear this. Okay. Yeah. Let's get a drum roll, please, here.
Yeah. Yeah. So I actually have a free ebook on this called The Secret to Raising Money to Buy Your First Apartment Building. And it really goes something like this. It is enabled by something I call the sample deal package. The sample deal package is an investor package that has everything about a particular deal, and everything's real, the financials, you know, the photographs, everything's real except for one thing, which is you don't actually have it on a contract, all right? So you go through and create this investor package with your projections, et cetera, and then you use it as a tool to approach potential investors, and you say, hey, look, this is what I'm doing with apartment buildings. I'm looking for a minimum of $50,000. The return is going to be between, you know, 10 or 15%. You know, would you be interested in something like that? And if they say yes, then you can use that as a tool to talk about what a potential deal could look like. And you can address their questions and their objections. And the goal and the idea here is that you get verbal financial commitments long before you put your first deal under contract.
Gotcha. And they're basing it off of this sample presentation that you have, right?
That's right.
Where do you find your investors?
You always start with your inner circle. And what you want to do is you really want to get a series of yeses from people. So you wouldn't call up a friend or a neighbor and going, hey, I'm doing apartment buildings. Are you in for $100,000? Yes or no? Right? They're going to go, no, duh. I don't even know that you did apartment buildings, right? I mean, what do you know about apartment buildings? So really what you want to do is you want to start with a series of yeses, and it's really more like, hey, I'm really excited about this apartment building thing. Do you mind if I tell you about it? They go, well, sure, go ahead and tell me about it, right? So you have your first yes, and you really want to get them. You simply just want to brief them on what's new in your life, because sometimes we don't talk to people in several weeks or months, and they don't know you in that context. So really just reaching out and updating people on their life and what's going on right now. And then you can, you know, at one point you can ask them, hey, you know, would you happen to know someone who might be interested in investing with me? And they might go, well, I might be interested. Or they might go, you know, my brother might be interested. And so you get a series of yeses and you start getting referrals, and you start with your inner circle and you slowly network your way outside.
What does the outside look like?
It can take various forms. One is referrals from your inner circle. One could be networking events like RIA meetings, for example, or meetups. And it could be that cold list of contacts you have in your Outlook or in your Google contacts list, right? You have like hundreds of people that you haven't talked to in a long while. Why don't you take those and put them in a like some kind of MailChimp email application and start, you know, just contacting them, just updating them on your life, saying, hey, you know, it's been a while. I just want to give you a quick update. Here's an update on the kids vacation, you know, work and, you know, this apartment building thing. And then maybe send out like a newsletter type thing once every, you know, 4 or 6 weeks and seeing if you can't pull some of these people back into your inner circle and reconnect with them. It's been surprising to me how you can reconnect with people that you maybe worked with 7, 8 years ago very closely, but haven't talked to in that period of time. And then now you actually grow in that inner circle.
That's great. Well, we have a number of listeners that maybe on fixed incomes or have limited resources. For some of these people looking at real estate investing for the first time, what would be your advice on how they should prepare and and take that first step.
Yeah, and you know, I have lots of people who come to me looking at multifamily investing, and it's because they want passive income and long-term wealth. And in this particular case, their goal is to secure their retirement. You know, they might have some Social Security or some other income, but they're concerned about it. They feel like they don't have enough for a retirement, and they're either, you know, a few years before retirement or they're just starting retirement, and they really want to augment their income. And real estate is a great way to do that. And depending on what your needs are, I mean, if you're looking for a couple hundred dollars, you know, a few hundred dollars extra every month, then, you know, you can achieve that goal with a single family rental house, for example. But if you're looking for something, you know, maybe $1,000 a month more or a little bit more, it's going to take you a while to get there with a single family house. And in that case, multifamily is a good way to start. And again, the biggest objection is, hey, I don't have money. I'm on a fixed income, limited reserves, and you know, I can't get started. So you already know what I'm going to say to that, right, Bill?
Go to your book, right?
Go to your book. Learn to raise money, and it really it's about educating yourself first. And I think, you know, for example, raising money. What is possible? How do you go about doing it? Where do you find your investor? These are common questions. And once you know the answer to that, you can visualize yourself doing it. You're like, oh, now I see. I see how this goes from step by step. And now their mind all of a sudden expands going, you know what? I see it. I think I can do it, right? And that makes a huge difference because now you're sitting there going, I'm going to fixed income limited reserve. How am I going to get into any kind of real estate, let alone multifamily? But if I can show you how to raise money and it mobilizes you into believing that you can, now that will actually change your life.
Yeah, that's great. All of us launching that educational part of it. And, you know, I know with myself, I, you know, reading the books and going to the podcasts and, you know, Bigger Pockets, all these different great resources. But you can get so caught up in that too, that you think, gee, I just don't know enough. I don't know enough. And you get in that analysis paralysis thing. When do you think people should take the leap?
You know, right now is a good time.
That's great. Well, I think that's something that, again, you can learn a lot. And I think you do have to get some basics behind you because you got to at least be able to talk the lingo. You're going to deal with bankers. You're going to deal with other people and professionals and brokers. And, you know, you need to be at least on a similar level in terms of at least understanding terminology and so forth. But taking that first step is really, I think, where the education, real education begins is when you really leap into it. And you learn sometimes the hard way. I think, you know, having a mentor or somebody like that can help you to maybe reduce the mistakes, but you're always going to make mistakes. That's just part of the learning process.
Yeah, right? I mean, you want to try not to sound like a newbie. I mean, if you're doing single family house, you can kind of bumble through it a little bit. But with multifamily, if you don't use the right words, a broker will quickly classify you as a newbie, and it can take you a very long time to get out of that. And you only have one chance to make a first impression. So using the right language, knowing some of the basic financial concepts, is key, right? And the second thing is learning how to analyze deals. I mean, I remember when I was starting to do this in 2007, it took me 4 hours to analyze a deal, which is a long time, right? I mean, you know, real estate is a numbers game. It takes me half a day to come back to a broker saying, hey, you know what? This asking price won't work for me, but this one will, and here's why. 4 hours is way too long. But most people, and I was completely overwhelmed with that. And now it takes me 10 minutes, not because I'm a lot smarter, but because I've developed a technique that does the same thing in only 10 minutes. And if you can do it in 10 minutes and get back to the broker with that same information and you're starting a negotiation process, you can go through a lot more deals and actually get to the ones that where an actual deal is made. And so these are all things that just a little bit of knowledge, and just it's just this knowledge. This is an example where knowledge makes a huge difference. And multifamily investing specifically, I just see light bulbs go off when I describe some of these techniques, and people are going to go, wow, like the sample deal package, for example. It's like one of those things where like, huh, interesting. It makes total sense to me. That solved this problem. I can now move forward. And it's this little bit of knowledge like that that removes roadblocks in people's minds. And that's what's really exciting to me.
That's great. Looking at your business, and it seems kind of far reaching now. You've got, you know, you've still got the pizza part of it. You've got, you know, a lot of, so when I say your business, I'm probably looking more at your real estate investing or your real estate related business. What excites you about your business today, and what do you see in your future? What are your goals?
So I've always loved the art of the deal, which is when I really love the house flipping, because it's all transactional, right? Love the deal. Then I was raising money, and I'd love to find the deal, raising the money, putting the management in place. I just love that. And now I've expanded that to basically helping others to do their first deal. And that's what I'm really excited about, is the combination of those two things is, yes, I'm looking for deals, and I'm still raising money, and I'm still doing deals, and I want to do bigger deals and whatever. But what's almost equally exciting is actually helping someone do their own deal. I mean, I got to say, I'm almost more excited about helping a student do their first deal than I am about my own deals, because it's so exhilarating to see someone go from where they were, you know, 6-7 months ago to having, you know, a 25 unit on a contract. It's just the transformation is just really inspiring. And so what I see, you know, is I want to continue growing both parts of that. They're very synergistic at the same time. I'm raising money, doing deals, helping others. In the process of raising money, perhaps I can bring investor money to the table and help and enable someone else do their first deal. So just expanding that business as a whole, that's kind of what I see the future for the company.
Wow. Well, the next part we do is sort of a wrap up here, where you can share resources and so forth that might be of value, as well as some of your wisdom here. I'm going to ask you a series of short, quick questions. We call it our wrap it up session. And if you can just respond, you know, short sentences as best you can. And you ready to do that?
Sure.
Okay. Favorite real estate book, and it can't be one of your own.
Yeah, you know, I gotta say, I mean, there are a variety of different real estate books out there. It really depends on what your strategy is, right? You got to kind of decide a little bit what kind of strategy do you want to pursue, and then find books that help you achieve that, right? I would say, I mean, if Rich Dad Poor Dad on a fundamental level is an absolute required reading, because it really shifts your mind. And if you haven't read that book, you need to do so immediately. There's not a specific real estate book though, Bill, that stands out for me that say, you know, you got to read this one book.
Right. Right. Now that's okay. I think that's a good one to recommend. How about favorite business book?
It's also tough to kind of figure it out. I think one that I read in the last 6 or so months was called The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy. And it really breaks down the impact of taking continuous action into a single direction. When you're doing little things today, compounded over time, literally changes your life. And it's very actionable, very specific, and it's so true. And I see it in my own life, even if you believe, and I see this in some of my students who don't think they're making a lot of progress, right? Because their goal is their first deal, which might take a year to do. And they get frustrated after 3 months because they feel like they're not making progress. But in the meantime, what have they done? They've created a deal package. They've actually spoken to 2 investors. They've analyzed 12 deals. And these are small things that they do each and every day that will have a huge impact down the road, but sometimes we don't see it or appreciate it, and we become so overwhelmed by the task that we don't even start or we give up. So this book was very eye-opening for me, and kind of articulated some of the things I've already felt, but also allowed me to become more productive.
Most valuable website for your real estate success?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's several out there for real estate in general. BiggerPockets is a great resource. I contribute to that, and there's great forums in there and a lot of contributors. FlipNerd is another one that has great videos and other content around real estate, and of course my site specifically for apartment building investing.
Final question: if you lost everything and you basically had to start all over and wanted to start your real estate business again, and you only had $1,000, how would you spend that $1,000 to get you started?
That's a good question. And so obviously I'd have to try to raise money, right? So what I would do is, knowing what I know now, what I needed to do, and so everything is gone, right? I assume all the assets are gone, my website's gone, and maybe I have a roof over my head. Is that it? Right?
I never really thought about it to that detail, but yeah, you could say that.
Well, for example, I mean, if like if you know, if I didn't have any track record to point to, and let's say that's gone, I would maybe use $1,000 first. I would need a laptop, right? Gonna need a laptop and internet connection, otherwise you're dead in the water. What I would do is I would probably start meetups, okay? And I would, and that money would go towards maybe, I don't know, renting space or something like that. But doing meetups, you know, and just doing networking. And what that does is it brings new people into your sphere of influence. You're positioned as kind of the expert. And that exposure gives you credibility and also expands your network as well. And then from that activity, I can start finding deals as well as contacts as well as money. So I would probably focus on, you know, raising the money. And I think meetups is a great way to accelerate that process.
And real estate, like so many other businesses, is very relational, and making those contacts, building your teams, you know, that's critical. So that's a great suggestion. Awesome. Maybe buy a nice suit, you know, wear it every meetup. Okay. Well, that's the wrap-up session. I wanted to see, before we move on, to share with people how they can reach you and get a hold of you. Any other last-minute things you might want to add?
You need to be very clear about your goal. I think a lot of people, they'll say, let me just do some single family house investing, and they want like $6,000, $7,000 a month in passive income. And I'm like, have you really thought about how many houses you would have to own to get there? And once they do the math, they're like, oh, I need 30 houses. I never thought about it that way. And I see that very frequently. And I just think it's very important that people sit down and figure out what do they want exactly. Like, really architect the outcome. Is it passive, active? How much? What does your life look like? And then really try to figure out a real estate strategy that matches that. And I think a lot of people will come to the conclusion that multifamily is a great way to go. And even if you only start with a duplex, which essentially is like a house, right? Start with a duplex, you're still in the game, right? You're still in the game. And especially if you learn to raise money, learn to analyze deals quickly, it starts taking some of the objections off the table that keep people from doing multifamily. So I guess my message is take a strong look at multifamily.
Great. How can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, my website is themichaelblank.com. So it's T-H-E, the Michael, and then B-L-A-N-K.com. And I have just a ton of free resources there. I have a YouTube channel. I have a podcast on iTunes. I have blog articles. I have a free ebook on raising money. So if you're interested in multifamily, that's a great way to really get concentrated. It'll keep you busy for hours. And that's also a way you can touch base with me as well.
Well, Michael, it has been such a pleasure to have you on the show. And you have, brought us a ton of valuable information. I would like to have you back in the future and hear how things are going, as well as tap into your vast knowledge here of real estate investing. But before we go, of course, we ask all of our guests to give us their best old dog howl. So are you ready, Michael?
Well, let's give it a shot, Bill.
Ow! Ow, 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 ow!
Wow. That's all I can say. That
just completely discredited everything I've said. Thanks,
Yeah, really. He seemed like such a nice guy until the end. What happened? No, just kidding. It's okay. We've discredited many people here on this show so far. So just join the crowd. We'll all be walking around with that $1,000 figuring out what we're going to do to restart our real estate investing. No, just kidding.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Michael. Appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time to share with us. And again, for the great, great information. All the things that Michael shared will be in our show notes. So if you didn't jot something down, if you're out jogging or you're somewhere where you couldn't do that, you can go to the show notes, and there'll be links as well to his website and the various resources he mentioned as well. So thank you all. And we'll be looking forward to seeing you next week. Thanks.